I'm going to say I'm a compulsive eater. I qualify because I just do. Can't stop eating within my own power. And I've been in the program about 8 years, coming up on nine. So the 9-step promises, to be completely blunt about it, I really didn't look at them until maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It's possible in our program to work the steps and just kind of go through without getting too deep into the big book. That changed when I just changed sponsors and they put a real emphasis on the 9 steps. I also think, just in my experience, that my pathway through recovery, I kind of get drawn to different things at different times. And that's just how it is. So, but in any event, just kind of rolling through, I do want to talk just a little bit about how it's affected me, the spiritual experience I had with it, and how those things kind of came out, and how it changed over my recovery career, for lack of a better term. So if we just go to the paragraph before this one, the last few sentences of it, and this is in step nine. So in step nine, we go to those people we need to make amends, with whom we need to make amends. And so how do we approach that? And it suggests an attitude, and I just want to read it. When we go to them, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. So if I can describe before I came into program and many years into being part of the fellowship, I would have gone for the servile or scraping part. I would have been, oh, I'm so sorry. I wouldn't have been exercising any humility that I'm coming to them as a person, you know, who's trying to make an amends. I would have tried to get on their good side by showing how low I am in their next sort of comparison way. So there is an attitude change right there that I guess we aspire to. And it's not one of the promises. So it's something we have to kind of aspire to. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. So if we just go to the first line, and this is my experience. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. Painstaking for me meant going through the steps with a sponsor several times. It meant going through the steps several times over several years. It meant getting to a point where I needed to call my sponsor every day and tell him what's going on. It meant talking to my sponsor about exactly what I'm eating. Is there sugar in that ketchup? Sorry to mention a food. Is there sugar in this? What are you doing? That was part of the spiritual experience I had to have. I had to be painstaking. And it's painful because, again, who wants to do this if they didn't have to? And then we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Before recovery, and maybe several years into it, I was amazed by nothing. I was very cynical, but cynicism is very shallow. It always knows the answer. Amazement, what is the answer? You can be happy without not knowing. That's what I have learned. And amazed is sort of a barometer of my recovery. If I can be amazed by something, that means I'm giving a little bit of myself that I don't know everything. When I have relapsed in recovery, I stopped being amazed by it. It was old hat. I was just going through the motions. And it's something to think about. It also has to do with step four. In step four, there's a critical line. We are to go through our fears to become what we're supposed to be in this world. If I'm not going through my fears, if I'm not willing to be amazed by things, then am I in recovery? It's a question. And then we are, and the next line goes, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, coming to meetings, having a sponsor, that's a lot of, I hesitate to call it work because from my position, it's not really work. It is something that I do. But to call it freedom, and even weighing and measuring my food, knowing exactly what I'm going to eat, it does result bizarrely in freedom. This is nothing I would have said before I came to the fellowship and probably 7 years into it. I would have never said that's freedom, but it is. It's weird how it works that way. It's counterintuitive, but there it is. And a new happiness. Yeah, I'm happy all the time now. Really, I can't say that I'm sad at any point. I don't have a feeling of dread anymore that I used to have. It's just not there. And I was someone who was very, very anxious before recovery and even several years into it. I had a lot of anxiety about very small things. I could not take the sort of logical risks that you need to take in life just to be human, really. And so I've had to learn that. And that's part of happiness. Happiness is, for me, is not getting everything I want, but being present and available for other people. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. I think that's another big part. Again, I think this is part of a spiritual experience that I'm discussing here, but it does go into sort of psychological problems that maybe result from being so isolated as I was. Because when we're at the food, we're not with people. That was my experience. So if I'm with the food, I'm shutting out everybody else. And if you do that for decades, it's going to take a toll. There's going to be a psychological price that is paid, even when you come out of it. And so a lot of that had to be kind of dealt with, and I'm still going through it. You know, this is not a one and done kabam. I'm finished with it now. The one thing I can say is that those things from my past that I still have, you know, feelings about, for a better, lack of a better term, what recovery helps you do is just face them. Is when they come up, just face it. Okay, what does it mean? What happened? Okay, you know, what is it? Take the feeling on right then. Right then, and deal with it. And don't be afraid. Again, we are higher powers, children, for lack of a better term. We can face it if we're with higher power. Okay. And I wish to shut the door on it. The wish to shut the door on it part is that I do have decades of experience. It's useful. It's worthwhile, if only to me. But I get the feeling in these rooms that it's worthwhile to other people as well. There's value there. And if I have the humility to realize that, then I can use it in various ways. And again, it's part of that being amazed part that I have to go towards. And then the next line, we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. I think that's right. Again, like I said, I'm not as anxious as I once was. I had a lot of anxiety. And like I said, I did not take the logical risks that you take in life. I'm able to do that now. I'll talk a little bit about it later, but you know, my career job or whatever has gotten better. It's gotten closer to what it quote unquote should be. But again, it was just taking the logical risks in life that you have to take. And not knowing what's going to happen. When I was in the cynical side, I always knew everything. Now I'm on the side where I don't know. But I do know that I walk with the Lord and I'll be okay. And serenity is real. Serenity is being, again, sort of the cliche one, but just being stuck in traffic. It's a 2-hour backup. You can't not go anywhere. Physically cannot go anywhere. But just being okay with it. This is just how it is. There's an end to this and I'll get there. That is serenity. And the many variations on that. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Again, like I was saying, we're in a fellowship with people at varying stages of recovery. What we have gone through is useful just as an experience to be shared with somebody else. You never know what someone's going to key in on. You never know. I remember things that I learned just in phone meetings, you know, 7-8 years ago. You know, when I was living overseas and I could only get through on the phones. Things people said then, offhand. It was nothing profound, really. It was just their experience. I remember it to this day. You know, there was I've shared it before, but One of the fellows was deep into sponsorship. She sponsored everybody. She did a lot of work for the fellowship. And one thing she said, and I had been in maybe 2-3 months, she said that she had switched her addiction, for better, lack of a better word, to sponsorship. She got very deeply involved in her sponsees' lives. And that became her whole focus of her life. And she realized she had to pull back. And so that taught me a valuable lesson about what is the nature of our disease and how I have to be conscious of what I'm doing while I'm doing it. That I cannot just check the box and check out. And that for me has been most of my time in recovery, not checking the box, not figuring, well, I'm going to meetings, so I'll be okay. Nope, not how it works. Because again, going to step four, am I taking the logical risk to go through my fear and become who I'm supposed to be? That's the line. Anyway, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That has been my experience. When I came into program, nobody felt more useless. I was, you know, had a child, married, had a child. I was over 40. And I had, you know, sort of a part-time job, but no real career. Another kid on the way. And no real prospects living overseas. And just by coming in the program, being able to get my stuff out, I slowly started to progress. Going a little bit, this is all career stuff. Doesn't have anything to do with us. But you can kind of see the effects. It wasn't me, you know, finding some new and interesting way of being me. It was having that spiritual change come over me. And other people, I think, this is my theory, sensing that in me and giving me an opportunity that I could actually handle at the time, both emotionally, spiritually, that I could handle. And then I lived up to their expectations. And I slowly got better. So, and self-pity, if I think for about the last year, self-pity was a big focus of mine. Where am I getting into self-pity? How am I getting into self-pity? It was a big thing that was pointed out to me, not by somebody else directly, but something I, again, heard in a meeting and then had confirmed just in a conversation with my sponsor. How am I getting into self-pity? I get into self-pity when I'm in that car in rush hour traffic and I go into the woe is me bit. Why? It has nothing to do with me. This has to do with land planning, land use planning decisions made 50 years ago. You know, too many houses in too many places, too many cars, not enough mass transit. It has nothing to do with me. This is math. This is, you know, sociology. But I want to take it on personally. Why? Why do I need to do that? What possible purpose does it serve to me to believe that somehow this is all about me? I'm just stuck in a car like everybody else around me. So that feeling of self-pity, when I see it, I really have to face it because it's a killer for me. Because again, if I'm just, oh, I can't do anything, I stop taking those logical risks. Again, they're logical. For the place and time, the person I am, they're logical. And we have to do them. We have to put ourselves out there a little bit. Just a little bit. Okay. And then we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. When I was in the food, all about me. And not even really about me, just about consuming. You know, I really wasn't doing a deep dive on what I'm actually thinking, what I'm actually going through. You know, some sort of self-reflective that can actually cause me to grow. It's all very shallow. It's all about me. What can I consume? What are my fears? What I've tried to keep the harms away, whatever I thought it were. Now it's easier to see that I'm part of a community, that I have to give something to that community to be part of it. I get something back and forth. And, you know, it's made life better. Then our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. That's very true. I think a lot of what the steps do for us, a lot of what being in the fellowship does for us, is it changes our attitude. Attitude is just a way of, I guess, progressing through the world. Again, we're all, you know, getting days and days older. We're all moving along a timeline. Now, are we moving this way? Or are we moving this way? Because this is the attitude. Our attitude is up or down. And so the attitude change when I was in the food was down. And that's where I was going. I changed my attitude to slightly more up, and it changes. So like I said, my anxiety went down. I saw the value in other people. I saw the value in just being one of many. And that's a big thing for me, just being another bozo on the bus. And with that, counterintuitively, my attitude got better. The more I'm part of things, the better this gets.
5-minute warning.
Thank you, Jane. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Again, this was a big one for me, you know, because I've been underemployed at an advanced age. It's still there, you know, like everybody can still feel it, but it's not what it once was. It doesn't get in the way of the things that I have to do. Again, this is one of those things. Fear of people. This is something I'm still working on. My project for the next probably 2-3 years is just making friends. Again, food was my friend. Food was everything. So do I actually have friends now? Kind of, sort of, holdovers. I like them, but I don't make an effort, you know? And so I have to be conscious of what are the small little baby steps that I can take towards doing that. And again, I'm going through my fear of rejection, my fear of being less than, my fear of whatever, to become who I'm supposed to be. And if this is a big fear of mine, then I have to face it. All right. And then we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I like baffle because it's just a fun word. And again, many things that baffle me. But again, one of another speaker says is that when we're confused by something, when we don't know what to do, that is a lack of willingness. All of us are smart enough. We're good enough at using our brains. Again, we can work Zoom. That's proof of something. All right. So the situations that we're going to find ourselves in, we know how to use. We intuitively know how to do them. It's going to be the rare thing. No one's going to ask me to disarm a nuclear bomb. That's never going to come up. But they are going to ask me, how do I tactfully get out of a situation that I may have found myself in? Or how do I get myself into something that would be good for me? How do I do that? So anyway, and we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we did not do for ourselves. And I think that's part of the spiritual experience. Okay, these many amazing things. And if all those things happened to you just even a little bit, and that was a big change from the way you were when you were in the food, then I think you have the right to be amazed by that and wonder what's going on. Because if you have, like I had, 40 years of experience of that not being the case, suddenly, out of the blue, by just going to some meetings and working the steps with another person, there's a huge change. You have the right to be amazed by that. And then I will say that these do come quickly, slowly. In my case, maybe on the slow side for some of it, but some of it was quickly too. In any event, that's all I have. I appreciate the chance to try this. I do have to go to work. I do have to leave in about 10 minutes, but I'll put my name in the chat. Reach out anytime. Thank you. Back to you, Jamie.